We have former Marlins player, current Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher, Tom Kohler, coming up on this special edition of Swings and Mishes. It has been 2 years since the passing of Jose Fernandez. Before we get started, this podcast is brought to you by BetQL. You can download the BetQL app right now in the App Store or Google Play. Also, get a better understanding on all the point spreads this weekend in the NFL, college football, all of the major sports. In fact, BetQL brought to you by the people who brought you RotoQL, the fantastic lineup optimizer. DFS players know all about it. Now they're helping you with sports wagering. The app gives you the latest how the public is betting. It also gives you value plays each week, lets you track your own bets. Best of all, it is free. BetQL can help you make your office pool picks. Just download it right now. Let them do the work for you. It's the best app I've seen. You can check lines, track plays, do anything else as it pertains to sports wagering. Again, the BetQL app is free. Apple, Android, the easiest, most useful tool that you need to understand the lines each week. Also, the BetQL app can be found online, betql.co. Download it now. See why it's my choice for information and tracking this football season.
All right, Craig, before we get to former Marlin Tom Kohler on this episode of Swings and Mishes, I know you wanted to share some of your stories and your story about what happened for you on this day 2 years ago when you found out about Jose's passing.
First of all, you guys should stay tuned because Tom Kohler's stories are, they're chilling. And I really want to thank him for coming on and sharing the stories that he will in just a couple of minutes. Really going to be fantastic for you guys to hear this on this, and maybe a little healing on this 2 year anniversary of the passing of Jose Fernandez. Certainly want to also mention two young men lost their lives also in that boating accident. So let's not forget this tragedy does extend beyond the passing of Jose Fernandez. For the purposes of the podcast with Scott Boras and the purpose of this podcast with Tom Kohler is to tell Jose's story. I covered Jose Fernandez for a number of years in the major leagues. And certainly this was a day in my professional history that I will never forget. The game that they played afterwards, I just could not go to. I didn't feel like I could be there. I just, covering the team as much as I did, it was just a game that I had to skip. And obviously I watched it on TV and felt those same emotions that everybody else did. In terms of the day that Jose passed, it was a Saturday night, a boating accident on Miami Beach. And 7 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, I'm assuming before this was out for anyone to know, my phone kept ringing over and over again. It was Andy Slater who was calling me. He kept calling me over and over and over again. I did not pick up the phone. I could not understand why he would be calling me so early. It didn't make sense to me. But eventually, after four or five times of him calling me, I picked up the phone and jokingly said, what are you doing? Like, why are you? I mean, this better be really good for you to be calling me at Sunday morning. And Andy told me that he had just gotten word that Jose Fernandez died. And I did the same thing that anybody else would, basically saying, you're totally wrong. This can't be true. It's nonsense. And he's like, no. I'm almost 100% certain that this is it, but I cannot confirm it. I mean, this is just somebody telling me that I trust one of my sources that, gave me this information. And so we're going back and forth on the phone, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still saying there's no way, it can't be, it's not possible. He is just adamant about this and saying, this is, I can't believe it. What do I do? And he said, can you just do me one favor? And can you call your people that you know with the Marlins and ask? So I said, okay. And so I hung up with him and and I start calling, my people. One person I'm not getting any response from. The other person I keep calling, he keeps sending me to voicemail over and over and over again. And so I'm doing the same thing that he did. He picks up the phone finally, says almost the same thing that I said to Andy. What are you doing? Why are you calling me? And I said, listen, I need you to do me a favor. No, not now. I heard that, you know, that Jose Fernandez passed away. Can you please? And he is questioning. He is, no way. This is totally wrong. Where did you hear this? You know, I'm telling him, I heard it from Andy Slater. He called me and told me, and he said, well, look, you know, I think it's total nonsense, but, you know, obviously I'll do you a favor here. I don't know about it. If indeed this is true. So you got to give me, you know, some time. It must have been less than 5 minutes. He called me back and he said, it's true. It is true. So I, you know, then got back on the phone with Andy and I said, look, man, this is the worst thing that I can ever remember happening in South Florida history. Like this is really it here. Yeah. So I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know how you're going to handle it, but you are right now, holding the information that is going to change the future of the Marlins franchise. So Andy took a while. I think in his heart, he couldn't do it. He couldn't, I pressed the button. I kept telling him, you got to press the button here and tweet this out. He couldn't do it. He was emotional about it. It took him a lot of time. Finally, after it must've been an hour, maybe 45 minutes. I don't remember. He finally sent the tweet out right after he sent it. I put on top of his tweet, hey, this is confirmed, and then off we go. And that was, you know, I mean, listen, my reporting on baseball is one thing, and making sure that you're right about that, and I do a lot of that, but that was what I remember most, unfortunately, from that. I mean, certainly I remember Jose as a player. I remember him doing, you know, on the field, being unbelievable, and there are a million stories like that, but that's my personal experience with that, Jeremy. And as we hear from Tom Kohler, he'll share his experience with that day, and also you know, Jose's history as well. So that's my story from that day. And then obviously everybody knows what happened after that.
Yeah, I can't imagine the emotions you were going through. Thanks for sharing that with everyone.
No problem, no problem at all. So you know, certainly Jose, in terms of on the field, and we'll talk about this. You know, certainly a lot more as our podcast goes on. I thought he was the best pitcher in Marlins history. I thought he had a chance to be one of the greats, whether it would have been with the Marlins or somebody else. There's debate about that as well. You know, we'll save that for, you know, certainly another podcast, but really looking forward to hearing from a former teammate of his in Tom Kohler. And as we mentioned, a second podcast today on the 2-year anniversary of the passing of Jose Fernandez, which obviously deserves a lot of attention today, because arguably this is one of the critical moments here in Marlins history. Our next guest here on Swings and Misses can certainly talk about that. He pitched with the Miami Marlins and in their organization at the big league level from 2012 to 2017, and also, of course, a teammate of Jose Fernandez. And I thought it would be, you know, certainly interesting to get his thoughts on this day 2 years ago. Tom Kohler, former pitcher with the Marlins, now currently with the Los Angeles Dodgers, joins us here on Swings and Misses. TK, thank you so much for being part of this podcast today. I know it's certainly a tough day for all the people who knew Jose Fernandez and played with him. So I thank you so much for doing this with me today.
Oh yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Obviously I would, love to have had my first time coming on here being about maybe a happier day, but, you know, I feel like there's stories that need to be told, and, you know, having been there, and it's crazy that it's already 2 years. So I'm happy to come on here and chat with you guys.
Well, I really appreciate it, Tom. And, you know, getting to know you through the years, we've talked about a number of different subjects, both baseball and certainly fantasy sports. I got to tell you, of all the things that I have covered in Major League Baseball, there's nothing that's going to ever come close to what I was thinking about 2 years ago today. And that would only dwarf what you had to go through being part of the Marlins organization. So I suppose before we get into Jose on the field, as I did with Scott Boras, I would like you, if you would, TK, to take me back to that day, that time, and kind of just run me through the events as to how you found out, and you know, as we talked about on Twitter, texting the players to come to the ballpark. So if you wouldn't mind expanding on that, if you could, 2 years ago today.
Yeah, it was kind of wild because, you know, our second child was born on the 22nd. So I was actually home on, you know, paternity leave. And I saw on Twitter that Jose got pushed back to pitch on Monday, and I was originally supposed to pitch Monday. So I kind of texted down there and said, hey, like, if I'm not pitching, can I stay home an extra day? And everybody was like, yeah, just, you know, get here by Sunday. That way you have 2 days to get your routine done and everything. So I left my house probably around 7:30 or so on Sunday morning, and I was driving down. So I didn't have my phone. I was listening to the radio, but it was not a baseball or a local sports channel or anything. So I had no idea what was going on. And, you know, I'm on cloud nine, just had a second kid, just brought her home from the hospital. I walk into the clubhouse around 8:45, and, you know, Justin Nicolino has the locker next to me, and he's just staring at me. And I'm like, what's going on? You're not gonna say congratulations? Like, I just had a kid. Like, that's normal customs amongst friends, is to congratulate someone when they have a child. And he's just staring at me. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And then he finally tells me, and he's like, hey, man, Jose died. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, Jose died. And it's like, Jose who? And it kind of went back and forth for a while. And obviously I didn't believe it. You know, I dropped the normal, you know, shut the F up, but knowing that there's no way he's joking about it. But I also was like, there's no way this just happened. So it was early. So I ran in, you know, Donnie always gets there early. So I ran into his office, and, you know, Donnie's sitting there, Michael Hill's in there, David Sampson's in there. I believe Tim Wallach was in there. Everybody was just staring at the TV, and nobody said a word when I walked in. So that's when I was like, this is really going on. So I don't remember the exact words, but I kind of looked at David and I was like, so Jose? And he's like, just looked at me with a yeah. I sat on the couch. We kind of all sat there in silence for a while. And we tried to figure out, you know, what's the next step. And, you know, he had asked me if I had the majority of the guy's phone numbers. And I said, I do. So I texted as many as I could and just said, hey guys, you got to come to the ballpark, game's canceled. But he asked me not to tell them why. Ugh. So I couldn't tell the guys why the game was canceled or why they had to come to the ballpark, because he didn't want anybody reading that text for the first time finding out. Like, we were going to have a team meeting about it. And so guys are like, why? Not everybody knows. A couple of guys just say, okay. A lot of them don't even answer, but, you know, in speaking to some other guys, they saw the text and maybe woke them up. And they then turned on the news or however they found out and got to the ballpark. But it was wild, because we kind of just sat there. You know, one of the guys, I'm not going to say who, mm-hmm. had been through a situation like this before. So it doesn't take a lot of research to figure out who it is. I just don't want to bring up anything for him.
Sure.
And, you know, he just drove around for Miami for a while. We sat there and nobody said a word until he came into the clubhouse, because it was going to be a one-time meeting and we wanted to make sure everybody was there. And he got there probably around 1:00. And so it was just day one. And that was just the sudden shock of it for day one.
Who delivered the message to you guys in the clubhouse? Who was the one who told everybody when it happened?
So David Sampson did a great job handling this whole thing. It's something that there's no script for, obviously. And you want to say everybody knows, or you would want to think that people know what to say or how to handle it. Nobody does. So he spearheaded the whole thing. He talked to us, explained to us what happened, but there wasn't a whole lot to say. It just was a lot of silence, a lot of figuring out, what do we do now? We sat there for a while. We knew we weren't going to play, you know, and then we all hopped on the bus later that afternoon to go spend some time with the family. And that just, I think for a lot of us, that's when it kind of sank in, because, you know, here we are, we lost a teammate, but, you know, a family just lost their whole life. You know, that what him and his mom went through to come over here from Cuba, and all the sacrifices she made to make sure he could play. And you just, that was the hardest part, because we're there and there's 40 of us trying to console her and his grandmother and his pregnant girlfriend. It just was a disaster.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine being in that spot. And there really wasn't a lot of healing initially until you guys got back on the field and played that game. But I guess, and
yeah,
but
even with that, even that game, sorry for cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
You know, that game will, will be one of the things I remember, for the rest of my life, like moment by moment. I remember, the Mets, and I thank Curtis Granderson for this, a few months later, for how classy they were when they met us in the field. Like that all happened organically. Like there was no discussions of that whatsoever of the Mets coming out. And it just showed that it was, what happened was bigger than the game. And I remember D getting up there and hitting that homer, and I had a bruise on my leg because when that ball was in the air, Jeff Mathis squeezed my leg so hard because it was just like, we can't believe this is happening, type thing. And, for that 3 hours, everybody kind of was able to just focus on the game. And, the crowd was incredible that night. Every time somebody jogged on the field to go stretch or to go run a sprint, the place went nuts. There was just so many emotions because you could feel the impact that this had on not just our team, not just baseball, but the entire community.
Was there somebody at that time, and you mentioned that David Sampson did a great job, so TK will certainly give him credit for that in terms of Marlins history. Was there someone in that time outside of David, or maybe it was David, that during the, I mean, it was still, a week or two to go in the season, but was there someone over the next 72 hours internally that helped you guys, kind of understand that and get through it? Because, certainly as ball players,
we all helped each other, I know personally for me, it was the first time in my life. Like I just didn't want to play baseball. I had no interest in finishing the season. We were out of it. We had played well and we kind of fell out of it. We had, I think, 8 or 9 games left. I had a new kid. I had a new daughter at home. I was just like, my head was in 1,000 places. A lot of times when there's a tragedy, people get to grieve on their own. You get to be around family members. But for our organization, we had to do it publicly. We had to walk in the rain with the hearse, and through Marlins Park. I don't think it was until after the funeral. After the funeral, we got on the plane and we went to DC and we all went out for a team dinner. I think it was the first time I heard half the guys in the team laugh again. Everybody was telling stories, reflecting about stuff that maybe he said or done, or just they got to relax a little bit. And that wasn't until 4 or 5 days after everything had happened. But as far as like that one person, the best part about it was, it didn't matter if you had one day of service time, 12 years, we're going to be a Hall of Famer. It was just a September call up. Like everybody was there for one another. And it's a bond. There's a bond between the guys who were on that team at that time that I just can't really explain how strong it is. We don't need to talk every day. We don't need to talk every month, but we all know that we're there for one another. And that is the best thing to come out of a horrible situation.
We talked a little bit about this with Scott Boras, certainly because he represented him. But, Tom, in my years of covering baseball and covering the Marlins, I could probably say that I think he would have ended up being the best pitcher in Marlins history, if not one of the greats in the game. But what are your thoughts on him as a player, and how should he be remembered as a player because of all the people that we could talk to? I mean, you were his teammate for a long time, both in the regular season and spring training as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've not been around somebody that is just so physically talented. right? I've been in, Los Angeles with Clayton Kershaw, who is the, if you look up the definition of ace in the dictionary, that's him, the way he works, how he studies the game, how he goes about his business. But as far as physical talent goes, I've never seen anybody like Jose. And, when you came to the ballpark every fifth day, especially at home at Marlins Park, you knew you were in for a show. You didn't know what kind of show it was going to be, but you knew you were going to get one. And I used to joke with them and say it's like one of those telenovelas, the Latin type soap operas that are on, the Latino soap operas on Telemundo or something, that his games always have, a beginning, and then there's a conflict, and then he overcomes the conflict, and then there's the romance of, him blowing a kiss to his mom in the front row, or taking his hat off and the people of Miami embracing him. And that's what a home game was. It was a spectacle every time he pitched. So I don't know how his career would have turned out. It's very hard to predict things with baseball. You're as a pitcher, you're always one throw away from your career being over. But unfortunately, decisions that were made robbed us of seeing how great he could have been.
Yeah. And I think that, his legacy, lives on today. The kind of the next chapter that I'd like to, end on here in the conversation, Tom, and I appreciate you giving me all of your time and really sharing some stories here, is the discussion of we never know what would have been, TK, with the Marlins. But I mean, in terms of discussing the Marlins franchise, I don't know that there is really anyone better than you to talk about it. I mean, you were part of them for almost a decade, and I wonder from your perspective how you think that event changed Marlins history, because as you know, things are completely different now. There are some people who feel, TK, that the owner of the team, that was really it at that point. Once that happened, he decided, okay, I've basically had enough. He went through, signed a couple guys and tried to go for it again, as you know, in 2017, but that was fleeting.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
Yeah, but I think in moments of tragedy, people harness their emotions and can use it in one of two ways. And it either helps you perform or it hurts you. Like, there's no in between. You're not going to be the same person. You're either going to be motivated or you're going to struggle. I'm very happy that they gave us another shot last year to try to, go out there and kind of show that we can do this. But when you lose a player of that magnitude and you lose it the way that we did, it doesn't go away. You show up to spring training, you got MLB Network there doing the 30 clubs in 30 days, you got radio shows calling in, and the all they want to talk about is how we're going to fill that hole. Now, they're only asking how we're going to fill the hole on the field. Nobody's asking how we're going to fill that hole emotionally. And it's not that simple. Like, I think everybody can look at the computer and see how horrible of a year I had last year. And I just could not put anything together. But there was a lot of guys who struggled just because, you're trying to replace something, you're trying to be something that you can't. And it just kind of speeds up on you a little bit more than it normally would. But then you have players like, Marcell Ozuna had his locker next to Jose's glass locker that had all his stuff in it. And he put up a year like nobody's seen. He was outstanding. He was motivated. He was able to harness that. And he was playing for his brother. So some guys were able to go out there and have career years. And other guys, I think, just like could not escape what happened and made it hard to go out there and perform every day. I don't know if it doesn't happen. I don't know that we're sitting here saying we're fighting for playoffs last year or the team's still together this year. It's what's going on, the decisions that are being made with the organization now. That's I don't peer into other people's clubhouses and try to or organizations and judge any moves they make. Everybody has a reason for why they're doing stuff. But I just feel that team would probably still be together. And I think Jeffrey might still be the owner had it not happened. But you know, some people struggled and on the field. And I think in Jeffrey's case, he lost a little bit of love for the game because he saw, you know, he was very proud of Jose. I mean, everything he did, getting his grandma to be able to come here, you know, they had a great relationship. He took a lot of pride every time Jose pitched in Miami, or, you know, even on the road from the moment he got called up in 13, you know, Jeffrey was at a lot of his games. And if he wasn't at his games, I'm sure he was watching him somewhere on TV. So when something like that happens, you look at the field and you see that he's not there, you're constantly reminded of it. And at some point it becomes enough and you have to make a change.
Yeah. And you're right. And you know, I've always felt that way. And certainly to me, I think that if that doesn't happen, I think that you could be right. And I think a lot of events changed starting with that one. And, you know, certainly it'll be a day that I'll never forget. I can't even imagine what you had to go through. And TK, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing a lot of the stories. And obviously for you personally, I wish you the best of health. And I know that it was going to be a very exciting year for you with the Dodgers. Unfortunately, the injury kind of derailed that a little bit. But I look forward to seeing you back on the field in 2019. And thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me. You know, it's always good to talk about the little background of how everything went down. But I think what just has to be remembered throughout all of this is that, you know, there's still a family out there who lost a son, and it's so much more impactful than just the baseball game. And, you know, for Maria and baby Penelope and that whole family, I just hope that they know how much they still mean to us and that we still think about them regularly, and that, you know, the city of Miami misses them.